In order to explain the various aspects of this decomposition, we will need norms of non-square matrices. We have defined the induced norms of matrices only for square matrices, but the case in which the matrix is non-square is not a problem. This is not a problem, since the usual general definition of induced norm of a matrix, that is, the maximum of the values of the norms of the vectors A by X, the maximum over the set of non-zero vectors, polynomial zero of unitary vectors, continues to make sense. There is no problem. Simply, these are vectors of C to the M, and these are vectors of C to the N. All the properties of continuity and so on that we used in order to show that this was a good definition, all the properties hold. So we continue to consider the same way. In particular, the case of induced Euclidean norm, and it can be shown that also in this case, that as in the general case, the two norm of matrix, not necessarily a square, is given by the square root of the spectral radius of the matrix A to the H by A. Simply in this case, these matrices are not square or rectangular, so we have to imagine that this is a product with matrices of that size. Another useful property that will be often used, that hold also for rectangular matrices and for the two norm, is that if we multiply a matrix A rectangular by two matrices, unitary matrices, say Z and W of the proper sizes, the two norm Z and W unitary matrices, the two norm of this product matrix is equal to the two norm of A. This is a fundamental property on which underlies the importance, the computational stability, say, advantages of using unitary matrices. Unitary matrices leave unchanged the two norm, and so they behave better than other kind of transformations. Well, we state, we define this decomposition. We have to add something important about the Bhavadev, the requirements
of the factors of the decomposition.
I mean that U and V unitary, I have already written here. The matrix in the middle, sigma, diagonal. Not only. While U and V are unitary of the proper sizes, U is M by M, V and VH, if VH is M by M, sigma must be M by M. But while U and V are made of complex numbers, are complex matrices, sigma is real. And non-negative. Moreover, the last requirement on sigma, sigma is has this essential property. If we count with small sigmas, sigma sub 1, sigma sub 2, sigma sub n, so we have already said that sigmas are real, non-negative, and not increasing order. This means sigma sub 1 larger or equal to sigma sub 2. In this order. The first problem. We have to see, we have to prove, that this decomposition exists with some aspects of unicity. More precisely, sigma is unique. U and V, we will see that they exist, but are not unique. The proof is somewhat technical, so we permit the simplest case. Case which is not reported on the PDF file, but particular case, in that case, the proof of the existence is quite simple. Assume the simplest case. Assume that 1, A is square, n by n, it's a very restrictive assumption, square and invertible, more restrictive assumption, In this case we can derive the SVD decomposition from the spectral decomposition. This guy is, if you consider matrix it's the same thing inverse the order. A to H by N. Consider this matrix. It is also square N by N. It is mission
and positive dashing.
So it's diagonalizable with unitary transformation.
I mean, there exists a matrix, I call it V, unitary, such that
V to the H by this matrix, by V,
will be diagonal.
Say G. Let us try to transform, to use this this property, this well-known property, this is the spectral, the composition of an Hermitian, positive, definite. The fact, the property that it is positive, definite, which is its utility.
If is positive definite,
D is also positive definite
and is made of
diagonal entries, the eigenvalues of H, or A to the H by A, strictly positive. If we derive an explicit formula from A, from the spectral equality, let us see if it is of some utility to find the corresponding SVD decomposition. Simply, let us do some algebra of this equality. We find D, V to the H on the left, on this side you can write the inverse of this matrix. The inverse of this matrix is the inverse of the omission of A by the inverse of B, that is H, that is V, since V is unitary. And now I state, then we prove that it is true, if we write the diagonal matrix D as the product of its of two factors equal to its square root, we find a decomposition that has the property as the properties that the SVD decomposition must have. In fact,
I say this is sigma. Sigma equal to the square root of V.
The positive square root of V.
V is V. Here I have
V to the H. The only thing to check is that the matrix on the left, I call it U, since now, is unitary.
But U magically proves to be unitary, because if you perform the product, U by itself conjugate transposed. U by U to the H, you obtain. This is U, it's conjugate transpose it is D is real, H, and A minus 1. This is D. I have left something. Maybe. Yes. I have left something to do. The goal is to find I, identity matrix, obviously. But there is a factor A in excess. Do you see something wrong? Somewhere? You have started from... Oh, it's all right. This is not A, but is, this is V by H, spectra of the composition of, not of A, but of this matrix. So if you multiply it by, on the left by this, and on the right by the other matrix, you find this is minus. You find the identity matrix. So in this case, this is not an interesting case. At least we see that all is true. The general case. The general case, the matrix is rectangular, so we cannot speak of invertibility. We start with the proof. Which must be which must be done by induction on the number of columns, not on the order, because the matrix is rectangular. So we must consider the smaller dimension, that is n. Existence of the SVD decomposition. Proof on induction by induction on. The starting case n equal to 1. This means that we have only one column, so the matrix is made by its unique column, it's a vector. In the book it is called with a small letter A. Let us consider the householder matrix U, householder transformation with matrix U, which brings this vector into a multiple of the first column of the identity matrix, say sigma sub 1 E sub 1. This is the column vector
we know that it exists. It is also unitary and Hermitian.
So we have immediately the SVD decomposition, because we may write A equal to A sub 1 equal to sigma 1,
the inverse of U that is U itself by
E sub 1, let us write sigma near the vector E sub 1. And finally, we add a number that must be seen as a matrix 1 by 1.
Because we want to see here the SVD decomposition that in this case must be made by square n by n, m by m.
The length is m,
m by m matrix U.
This is capital sigma,
which has the same size of A, so it is a vector in this case.
And diagonal matrix. The last matrix, the matrix V, in this case is of size 1, so all it's 2.
Sigma 1 in the Hausdorff procedure can be chosen as a positive real number. If you give a look to the complicated formulas of the Hausdorff method, you will see that choice of some parameters can be made in such a way that here is a positive, non-negative, but non-negative because the matrix A could be the zero matrix. It is also possible that we have to do with all zeros matrices.
Well, the general induction case, we assume that the SVD decomposition exists for matrices of having a number of columns less than n, and we consider the case of a matrix with n columns. We don't need nothing, so I wrap out all.
Now n is greater than 1. Let us start from the two norm of A. A is rectangular, but we have just remarked that there is no problem to define the two norm of the rectangular matrix. It is a maximum. So this maximum will be reached by some vector x having two norm equal to 1 for some x with the norm, the two norm, it is always the two norm. Define the vector y as the product of A by x. Normalize it, so we premise the number fraction 1 over the norm of A by x. It is the same thing that this is the norm of I. Is it clear? I start from the norm of A. I call it
sigma sub 1. This is a maximum, so it is reached by some value of x. X is a norm 1 vector. I consider the product A by X, which is a vector of R to the M. I normalize it, so I divide this vector by its norm. Its norm is sigma sub 1. This is a vector. It has obtained by a normalization. So the two norms of y is also 1. Why all this? Because these two vectors are the bricks, the founding elements of the updating process of the induction, in the sense that if we consider the following unitary matrices. One matrix is constructed picking x, the vector x, as first column. A matrix I call it V sub 1 unitary, one of the possible infinitely many matrices which have as first column this unitary vector. I can construct a matrix of this type with the Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization. There is no problem. I consider generic unitary matrix with this requirement. Dimensions n by n. I do the same thing considering another unitary matrix which I will call U sub 1 with y as first column. And I give a look on the many properties, as we will see, enjoyed by the matrix obtained by transforming the starting matrix A by this matrix to the H on the left and this other matrix on the left. It makes sense dimensionally, sure. This is rectangular, this is square, this is square of the proper dimensions. The properties of this matrix. I say the main property till now. I will see that the matrix A sub 1, rectangular matrix, has this structure. Sigma sub 1 on first position, 0 is row, 0 is column. Here is another matrix which will be called B, I remember well, yes, which has n minus 1 columns. So I will apply the induction assumption to the matrix B, and the matrix B could be reported, could be referred to its SVD, the composition. With this path, starting from a problem, the matrix A with n columns, I reach a problem reduced where
matrix B has only n minus 1 columns. So the fundamental, the basic thing I must prove is that the matrix, this matrix, has this form. In the right order, first thing, it's simple, see, is that there are zeros here. So I give a look, firstly, to the first column of A sub 1, that is A sub 1 by A, by E sub 1, the first column of the identity matrix. I multiply there is H. Well, V sub 1 by A, for just this reason, V sub 1 has been defined in this way. Its first column is X. So this vector is X. So we here we have A by X, but A by X is sigma sub 1 by Y. Sigma sub 1 by the vector Y. We have sigma sub 1 U sub 1 to H by Y. The product of the conjugate transpose of U sub 1 by Y gives again E sub 1. You have to perform all the scalar products. You have only in the first position scalar product, the result different from zero. It's equal to 1 because Y has been normalized. This is the reason for the normalization. So we have found that the first column of the transformed matrix has this form. Assume, give some name to the subvector formed by the columns from 2 until n of the first row of A sub 1. We want to see that this subvector W is the zero vector. Accordingly to the usual conventions, we put here W to the H, the transposed conjugate. We want to see that this vector must be zero. Why? This is slightly more complicated, but we use all the processes of the functions this way. We call the first row of the matrix A sub 1 with the letter Z put by column Z defined as sigma 1 that. And consider the product of this matrix by its first row put by column. We obtain the vector first row
by the vector
z.
So we obtain sigma sub 1 by itself plus w to the h by itself by w, that is the square of the norm. Second row of A by this vector, we have 0 by sigma sub 1 plus B by W. We have this, this vector. Let us consider the norm, square of the norm of this vector. That is clearly equal to the square of the norm of the first row of is equal to the square of this number, which is already the square of the norm of z. Okay, this is the square of the norm of z. To compute the square of the norm of this vector, I have to square this number, so I have the fourth power plus the square of the norm of this. Now it's right. The second member, the second left, right hand side, is larger than is larger than this term because this term is non-negative. This is quite simple. So consider the first and the last terms and divide both by the square of the norm of z. Find this divided by the square of the norm of that larger than the fourth power, second power of the square is left. Well, what does it mean? What does it mean? It means that there is a square. And since here was an index one, since the norm is the maximum, can be written also as the maximum of numbers of this kind. There are two equivalent definitions we have covered during the first semester. I can consider only the unitary vector, so I have not the denominator, but it is the same thing to normalize all the vectors I consider here. So we have a normalization term, and the maximum is referred to the set of all non-zero vectors. This is the same thing. It's always the induced norm of A. So we have here the squares, but simply a can put a square everywhere. So I have a particular Zen, so I can write that node squared of A sub 1 is the maximum of number of this kind. Among them there is this value for Z, and this value is larger than the square of Z. The square of the moment of Z is sigma sub 1 squared plus the norm of W squared. On the left, I have sigma sub 1 to the square, so I found that this number is larger than same number plus something that cannot be negative. I simplify, I have 0 larger than the 2 norm squared of the vector W. Finally, from this I conclude that this vector W must be zero for this reason. For this. An important remark is that I have used it already without justifying very well this fact. Because why the norm of A sub 1 is equal to sigma, where sigma sub 1 was the norm of A. Because the two metrics have been obtained one from the other by means of a transformation with unitary matrices. We have at the first and the second hour observed that when we use unitary matrices, the norms, thus the two norm, does not change. So the norm of A is equal to the norm of A sub 1. So we have exactly, can write exactly all this. The proof is not yet finished because now we have to see that we can apply the induction assumption without particular problems. We have found that A sub 1 that was now I analyze the matrix B, which has only n minus 1 columns, can be expressed by the SVD, by its SVD decomposition, has a unitary, I call it U by 2, by a suitable sigma matrix, I call it sigma sub 2, by V sub 2 to the H unitary matrix.
So we have I here.
Now you have to put all together to see that
A can be written as matrix on the left is inverse of this by U sub 2
the middle matrix sigma which is made up by the sigma sub 1 of the induction step and the matrix
the diagonal matrix sigma sub 2
and the last matrix is
is n by n
and is made by
1
v 2
to the h and finally
v sub 1
to the h.
This is the complete SVD decomposition. A lot of it, then I stop. The property that makes sigma unique is that the values sigma i's are in not increasing order.
This can be seen at the level of the induction, at the induction level,
by proofing the mass check that sigma sub 1
reached this form, this was matrix B, the first value, sigma sub 1, must be not less than the corresponding values of the matrix of the submatrix B.
That is assured by this inequality. Why this inequality holds? Because if you consider square of this is the square of the norm of A, that is the same that the norm of A sub 1, that is the norm of this matrix. This is block diagonal. So you easily find that
this is the maximum between
square of sigma sub 1 and spectral radius of the matrix B to the H by B. And this is the maximum shape. It is necessarily greater than 1 of 2 arguments of mass. Okay.
We stop here, and next time we will see the most interesting part in regarding the SVD decomposition, because we have not yet said why, in which way this decomposition can be used to solve the least square problem. Okay, see you next Tuesday.